Nearly 30% of Americans have some sort of mental problem over the course of the year. The vast majority are not life-threatening, things like anxiety disorders, mild depression, job-related stress. NPR's Joanne Silberner looked at people with mental disorders who are struggling but still functioning. She found there are more kinds of therapy and more medications than there used to be, that many more people are being treated than in the past, and that HMOs and other managed care organizations are having a tremendous impact.
Life is changing for people with mental disorders in terms of the care they're getting and how it's paid for. But until their diseases are diagnosed and treated, they still suffer.
Tremendous clutter in my brain, racing rapid thoughts so fast that I couldn't keep up with them.
36-year-old Lori, who didn't want her last name used, has manic depression.
I would go from being extremely up and agitated sleep interruptions tremendous racing thoughts to being at the utter depths of despair.
Over the course of 4 years, she tried to kill herself several times. In between her depressive episodes, she managed to work in public relations. In a way, Lori was lucky. She was in therapy with a psychiatrist who a few months ago put her on a new medication for manic depression.
Now, for the first time, I feel that there's a calm that if you were to chart and do a depression at a low and mania at a high and go up and down above the line, I feel for the first time in 4 years that I've been on the line for, you know, a consistent period of 7 or 8 weeks at a time, which is just truly amazing to me.
Years ago, Lori's doctor might have put her on lithium, but lithium can cause stomach distress and weight gain and tremors. Lori says she never would have taken it. She's had no side effects or problems with her new drug. In recent years, new and more effective drugs for a host of mental conditions have come on the market, most notably Prozac and other antidepressants. Talk therapy is also changing. Psychoanalysis, 3 or 4 or 5 sessions a week for several years, has been out of vogue for decades because of the expense and effort. Regular psychotherapy is getting shorter and shorter, aimed more at teaching people new behaviors than delving into their past. The new therapies mean a whole new way of thinking for people like Andrea Salenza.
Okay, why don't we get started? I have 2 handouts for you.
Salenza trains psychologists at Cambridge Hospital in Boston, a Harvard teaching hospital.
What I'm going to be presenting to you today is an integrative biopsychosocial perspective that comes from comprehensive, thoroughgoing assessments aimed at addressing psychological functioning and symptomatology across.
Salenza believes that most people with mental disorders could benefit from psychoanalysis, but she concentrates on teaching short-term and less expensive therapies. Group treatment, family treatment, couples treatment, how to integrate drugs with psychotherapy. It's not just because these therapies have proven effective, it's also because of the change in how care is paid for. Salenza has to train her students so that they can get jobs.
In the last few years, one way that I have slanted the training that I have provided, the teaching that I'm doing, is that I am much more cognizant of the political and social and economic realities. Because we've had to become aware of those forces. Economic changes have, to some extent, changed people's philosophies of care.
Insurers have pretty much always had limits on open-ended psychoanalysis, and now 95% of policies limit any kind of outpatient mental health care by paying only for a certain number of visits or adding an extra copayment or deductible. Included in this figure are managed care plans that do things like pay for visits only to specific social workers or psychologists or psychiatrists, or periodically review cases. As well as teaching, Andrea Salenza sees patients in private practice, and she says managed care pressures to cut costs make it too easy to just keep people on drugs without giving them psychotherapy as well, which can be particularly damaging to severely ill patients. She says having to get permission to see a therapist can be a barrier at any level of illness.
It colludes with people's resistance to entering treatment. We all have a resistance to looking at the pain in our lives. It's not fun. Psychotherapy is very hard work. It's not like, you know, having a good time. So we have to overcome that resistance in order to get into treatment. And if you have an insurance situation that discourages you to access care, it's going to collude with that resistance.
But Salenza says that while it's easy for psychotherapists to view managed care as the enemy, the managed care revolution hasn't been all bad. It is forcing the psychology profession to be accountable, to do outcome studies that determine what works and what doesn't.
There were some treatments that were lasting, and this still goes on, many, many years, that perhaps were at impasses or were going nowhere and there was no one overseeing it. I'm not suggesting that it's good to have a third party oversee your treatment, because that gets into a lot of issues of confidentiality and oversight, which are very difficult. But there is a greater awareness of staying effective.
Even generous insurance plans are switching their mental health coverage to managed care. There's a new law that will lift annual and lifetime caps on mental health care. No one is sure just what the effect of the law will be, but experts expect that there will be even more and stricter managed care. Psychiatrist James Sabin works for a managed care plan, Harvard Pilgrim, and he says managed care can take away an insurance company's fear of unlimited payouts.
There's a strong basis for hoping that well-thought-out, scientifically-based care that looks for achieving outcomes in the most efficient way that can be done will actually increase access to mental health care by increasing the trust factor of the mental health system.
Whether managed care is good or bad for treating mental health problems is likely to be a hot issue for some time. But there is one mental health problem some HMOs seem eager to attack. It's a problem Matthew Budd encountered when he became a doctor 20 years ago. He had gone to medical school to learn how to take care of people's ailments. When he started out in practice, he found that all too often, his medical knowledge wasn't helping his patients much.
What do these people have? Why do they have headaches? Why do they have backaches? Why do they have insomnia? Why do they have palpitations when they have no heart disease?
Dr. Budd decided that most of his patients' physical problems were connected to mental problems. So he went back to school and studied psychology and eventually developed something he calls the Personal Health Improvement Program.
So, why are you here? What questions do you have? Say anything, like I do.
There we go.
Start, get it over with, right?
You're good.
Well, I'm here because, actually, I guess my primary care physician is tired of listening to my problems that, quote, aren't that real.
So you're here to help your primary care physician?
Yeah.
Why don't you just bring him an aspirin or something?
In a videotape of one class, Matthew Budd stands in front of a couple of dozen members of an HMO who have been referred by their physicians. One woman is depressed about her cancer. Another man is just plain anxious.
It's just an ongoing case where I go at 100 miles an hour all the time and tend to get stressed out, tend to be the person who will lose my temper on the expressway if that car does pull out in front, easily provoked, easily overreact, and get run down as a result. And I guess what I'd...
Run down is the least of your dangers.
Perhaps, although there's incredible fatigue
associated
with it, and I guess what I look for is through this kind of class to come up with
some
a better
choice.
Sense of balance.
Yeah, some freedom.
Yeah.
From yourself, from your habits. It's so hard to do, but it's possible.
In 6 weeks of once-weekly sessions, participants are asked to think about their problems and how they deal with them, to recognize how they act out, and learn new strategies to deal with their feelings. Budd says his program has had results.
As they became aware of the habitual interpretation system that they lived in of thinking, that they were able to become more free of it and do other things and sort of laugh at themselves when they waved their fist on the expressway.
And their symptoms began to diminish.
60% or so of the patients had striking improvement in this program, measurable by the way they felt, by the way they scored on formal testing, and by their utilization of medical care. They came for medical care two-thirds less often.
The results, in just 6 weeks, got the attention of managed care companies. Patients who come in less often cost less to care for. 20 companies now offer the Personal Health Improvement Program. Corporate America has begun developing its own stress reduction programs, and now better than a third offer some type of help. But the efforts of some businesses and managed care companies to treat mental problems isn't nearly enough, especially when you get to more serious conditions, says psychiatrist Mark Olfson of Columbia University.
We know that about half of the people who have a disabling depression don't receive any treatment in the course of a year, and the proportions are even higher for some of the anxiety disorders. We still have a long way to go, I think, in trying to reach all of the individuals who have significant conditions.
The people who miss out on treatment tend to be less advantaged to begin with, Olfson says.
They tend to be lower income. They tend to live in rural areas. They tend to have less education. And they also tend to be members of ethnic and racial minorities.
Why aren't they being treated?
Well, they're not being treated, I think, for a variety of reasons. Part of the reasons are economic, in that we know that when people have to pay out of pocket for their care, that they cut back on treatment. There are also geographic barriers. When people have to commute long distances, they become less likely. And there are also cultural and attitudinal factors that come into play. There are many groups for whom mental health care is not part of their, that is formalized or professional mental health care is not part of their culture, and so that these people are less likely to use mental health services.
But how bad is it to go untreated? Is it really worth it to help people who aren't psychotic, just angry or anxious or depressed? Olfson says, absolutely, both to prevent pain and discomfort, and because untreated conditions like mild depression can escalate into a major problem. More people have been entering the mental health system. The number of people receiving some form of outpatient care doubled between 1971 and 1990. Olfson suspects the trend will continue because of increased awareness of some of the new drugs and a decreasing stigma associated with mental problems, even with managed care companies working to hold visits down. Many in the mental health community would like to see even more of an outreach, the same sort of effort to screen the population for mental problems as there is now to screen people for high cholesterol. But with the pressure on healthcare dollars from all directions, that's not likely to happen soon. This is Joanne Silberner reporting.